Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Trust Talk Thursday show. So this is every third Thursday we get to chat with Lee Brovedani. She is known as the Trust Architect. She's a speaker. She is a workshop facilitator. She's a scuba diver, even a dry diver, I think is the term. She's also, and all of what she does is about trust, right? She's a trust architect. She's recognized as a top thought leader on trust by the organization Trust Across America. And she's an author. A couple of her latest books are Trust Me, Restore Belief and Confidence in an Uncertain World. Everybody should be reading this book right now. Also, Trusted, Secret Lessons from an Inspired Leader. You can go to her website, thetrustarchitect.biz. Of course, get her books on Amazon. But welcome back to the show, Lee. How are you?
I'm good. I'm in the middle of a move. We're moving from Philadelphia down to Savannah and then splitting our time between that and Nova Scotia. So I'm in the midst of boxes and moving and getting rid of things. And Booker, quit groaning. I have my dog behind me and he's for some reason letting me know he's not thrilled about the move either.
He's like, what's going on?
The routine is going to change.
Yeah.
But he'll have new places to sniff and pee on.
You know, exactly. And that's what we all want in life.
Yes, absolutely. Well, anyway, you may hear some snores from two little doggies here.
Okay.
Yeah, Pip and Hamish may say hi to Booker. You never know what could happen on the show. But today's show, very, very important, talking about the education system. And I want to say restoring belief and trust in the administration. I know that they're battling. It's hard to get teachers. So trust is a big part of what's going on. I know it kind of goes hand in hand with our medical system too. I mean, frontline workers are exhausted, teachers are exhausted, parents are exhausted. There's a lot of homeschooling going on too, but we always talk about the five tenets of trust. So that's the core, the backbone of everything you do.
Yes.
And so when we look at the education system, is it an industry? That's a weird thing to say, the education industry. I don't like that. That's not nice, but
it feels like it should be a calling, but you know, it also feels like they should be paid what they're worth. And I think that would take us on a whole other road, because I think that good teachers are the foundation of society, because if our children aren't educated properly, then what do they grow up to do? And so in order to get the best, I think that they just have to be rewarded for the hard work that they do. So here's to all the teachers. I love you.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, we do too. No, because that's what changes the world. And it's especially teachers that inspire kids to think.
Yeah.
You know, not just take knowledge and repeat it in a test, but to really take a hold of that knowledge. And I think it does come from also the leadership in, you know, an education, you know, system, whether it's a school or a college. I mean, colleges are changing too. I mean, it costs a ton of money. You've got to think about the student. Do I trust knowing that I'm going to be spending all my money on student loans for the rest of my life? Am I going to trust this college to fulfill my dreams, you know?
And here's a wrench in the works. I was talking to a friend of mine who is head of a department at one of the major universities in Canada. And she said that by the time they finish their four-year degree, the information they have is obsolete.
Oh, wow.
So,
wow.
You know, it's there's so much to consider. Do you trust that? So it has to be a new way of thinking, that it's not just the information they're learning, it's teaching them how to learn so that they can go forward and constantly be right at the cutting edge of everything that's happening in the industry they choose. So I think that, you know, education as far as trust, and for those who haven't tuned in for a while, do you mind if I go over the five C's?
I was going to say we should go over those.
Yes, we should do that.
The five tenets of trust. So they're caring, commitment, consistency, competence, and communication. So I will trust someone more if I know that they genuinely care about me. And caring means, you know, it can be as simple as putting your phone down when you're talking to them so that you're not scrolling through texts while you're supposed to be having a conversation.
Right.
There's a lot of different examples for caring. Mm-hmm. Commitment means doing what you say you'll do. And it's easy to make a commitment when you first meet somebody and when you first commit to doing a task. But it's, you know, are you still committed to doing what you said you'd do after kind of the bloom has fallen off the rose? Is that the same?
Yes. I mean, the honeymoon's,
honeymoon's over. Yeah.
But you dipped your toes in the water and the water wasn't the feeling that you thought it was going to be.
And you still said you'd jump in. So you jump in. So, well, that's maybe not a good metaphor.
Scuba diving.
Why? So the idea is to learn to swim.
Yeah. Yeah. And consistency. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like consistency has a lot to do with, if I say something, then my actions should mirror what I'm saying. So that's a consistency thing. So a lot of times when we think a person is a liar, it's because what they say and what they do are at odds. So being consistent and hiring somebody, I would rather have someone. I remember when I was in HR, if I had someone who was a star at sometimes, you know, like they had this amazing, stellar work, and the next day it was complete crap. That was a trust issue because I didn't know what to expect. And for people who are in administration and have a teacher and they're brilliant one day and not so brilliant the next, one of the things I always say to check is to see if there's some mental health, some stress issues, or some addiction issues. So consistency sometimes shows up in those ways if there's a problem with it. So caring, commitment, consistency, competence, making sure that you can do what you say you can do. So having the skills, and they change, our trust kind of changes according to the complexity of the task. Yes. If I am going in for really like heart surgery or brain surgery, and the guy is maybe not a touchy feely warm kind of caring guy, but he is super confident, super competent, I might be okay and trust him in that way. So it really, you know, like you have to think about how they all fit together. And the last one is communication. Can you communicate all of the other ones? Can you show through your words, actions, and deeds, which is all part of communication, that you understand all of these and how they work together?
That's really huge for education. I mean, that is. I mean, you think communication, the teacher, but the communication between, you know, the leadership staff and the teachers, the, you know, and the students, you know, it kind of has to be like a full circle, I think, in a school setting. And competence, you know, there's teachers that are brilliant minds, especially professors. And, you know, we've seen that on shows where you've got the wild and crazy professor who's going to teach you skill and to think, but he may be having cocktails around the corner with your mom.
Well, I didn't say
that was happening, but you know what I mean?
You know, I just smiled recently because Lisa, if you've tuned into the show a few times, you'll know that Lisa and I were probably not the most, we were probably bright students, but probably not the most behaved students. And maybe
Nancy was an angel.
Yeah.
And I still am.
Yeah, right. You set a lot on fire. You and your brother stealing.
We did.
Cigarettes and donuts set the lot on fire.
We set the vacant lot on fire.
Okay,
next
that
to
doesn't sound
pennies.
Like, you know, a really. I'm rethinking about this story about Nancy being really a well-behaved kid, because that does not like
I am now.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we took matches and cigarettes, and we went in, we're so smart, we went in the vacant lot right next to where we took the cigarettes and matches from. Went in the vacant lot and tried to light cigarettes and burned our fingers, threw down the matches and the cigarettes, and the lot caught on fire. So we ran home. And when we got home, we could hear fire engines. We're like, uh-oh.
And but you then have,
the next day you go back and you look, you know, so it is true.
See, typical criminal, go back to the scene.
You go back and look, and it really was hardly any damage at all. There was one part of the wooden fence that had a big black, like, smoke thing on it. And then basically we cleared the weeds. We did a fine job.
Well, you know, and a controlled burn is really good for a field. So I take it back. You were an excellent student.
So, but okay, but so look at this. It goes back to the scene of the crime. Now, teacher knowing, okay, there's a problem child that wants to act out, which means, okay, am I delivering content? And am I giving them something? Because when we misbehave, you've got some brains going on. There's something, usually.
Well, you're thinking,
but you're bored and stuff is going to happen. Mm-hmm. So, and then there's the teachers. I know, Nancy, you were talking about the one last time on the show where the kid would throw a peach pit and she turned around and throw it right back at a kid. So you wouldn't want to try and do something to a teacher that is also consistent in saying no, behave yourself kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You have to have some strictness, right, as a teacher?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And you have to be able to know how to manage the kids in a way that there isn't corporal punishment, you know, like right now.
Well, it's true. That's not funny.
But when we were young, like, honestly, the strap was still allowed. So if you misbehaved, there was the threat of going to the principal's office, and they had this horrible piece of leather that was like a quarter inch thick. I remember it because it had a stripe on each end. And they would come and they would hit it on the table first just to intimidate you.
Right. Well, in the
and
one
you got it across the palm of your hand.
In the one high school I went to, I'm going to go say headmaster, but it's principal in this country. He had footprints painted on the floor and handprints so that you would have to bend over. Now think about that today. You would have to bend over, no matter if you're wearing a mini skirt or not, with your feet on the footprints, your hands.
Everyone could see your fanny.
On the floor, and he had ping pong table, tennis thingies, and that's paddles. That's what he used if he was going to smack
somebody. Okay, now he would be arrested as a pedophile. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, what about the nuns putting my hands under cold water and then getting the ruler out and whacking your knuckles?
Well, that's bad.
Wow.
Don't talk to me about fat fingers. Everyone who knows when I text, it's terrible. So I blame the nuns. Oh, I'm going to get in trouble.
Oh, you're so going to get in trouble.
I'm going to so get in trouble. But no, but there is consistency in, like, don't try and get away with something with this teacher. It doesn't have to be a complete grouch, but hey, we're here to learn. We can still have fun. But if you misbehave, there's a consistent, your communication be strong, but you have to kind of back up your words, right? If you say, okay, you're going to detention, you can't be wishy-washy about it. You're going to detention, right?
Yeah.
And you know, one teacher I had, I always thought this was incredibly funny, and I liked him as a teacher because he was smart, he was cute, and he was funny. He was a biology teacher, and he put a mask, like his face is here, and on the back he had like this little mask with two eyes. And it just said, I'm watching. And so whenever you turned away from the class, you'd see these two eyeballs watching you. It was pretty realistically done, and it was funny. Yeah, it
worked. And humor works. You know, like, who was your favorite teacher, Lisa? And why did you trust him?
Mr. Vikstrom. Well, do you remember any other names?
Listen, I went to 16 schools. There were some teachers that were good, but I wouldn't say that. There was one at the end. It was our vice principal. And he was a history teacher, and he, like, you couldn't get away with anything. Like, he was a pain in the butt. And then the one teacher, home teacher that we had, Mr. Porquita, he was pretty cool because he would go outside and have a cigarette, and we're all like going, are we going to steal his cigarettes? So that was, you know, but he was laid back and let us think and communicate. like have discussions to understand something. But at the end, it was the vice principal that I liked because he turned it. I got into history and he was a history teacher. And before I thought he was really boring. But when I got back on the from the tour with Nancy and had been through all these historic sites, I had changed. And so I could appreciate him better. So I don't know if that's actually a good one, but nah.
I had my, it was, for me, it was didn't my happen. Grade nine teacher. It was, and he's, you know, it's interesting because up in Canada, he just received an award for excellence because he left teaching and he became a news reporter and he writes articles and he was a drama teacher and an English teacher. So he writes about all the movies and he publishes in the Hollywood Press or whatever. Anyways, plus he's in Calgary. But he was, you know, I look back and I think, my gosh, he was, we were in grade nine, so we thought he was old. He was probably 22.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. No, but that's what I'm thinking now about
the old man.
The teachers I thought were old are no.
Yeah.
I'm a granny.
And he was just this cool guy. And he was so innovative at teaching that it didn't matter what he was teaching, you wanted to go to his class. And all from my perspective, all he had to do to discipline you is say, well, that's disappointing. And it was like,
oh wow.
Oh, I disappointed Mr. Hobson. His name was Louis Hobson. And so Louis, if you're listening there, you're still my favorite teacher. But
disappointing's bad, yeah.
Yeah,
if you have a crush on the teacher and they do that, that's even worse.
Well, I never had a crush on him. But he used to do things like if he misbehaved, like he knew everybody so well that if he heard voices and tittering and everything, he'd turn around and hit you with a piece of chalk. Like sometimes you'd get a piece of chalk alongside the head and he'd say, quit talking. I'm trying to teach a lesson. And all of us, it was like, oh yeah, yeah, I got caught. You weren't even angry. It was just like, oh.
It's funny. It's funny.
How much do you think of, you know, what teachers do to connect with kids and how a classroom works? I mean, that is leadership, right? That is
absolutely
total leadership. And you're leading people who have never been taught about leadership. You don't know what's going on in their home life. What they haven't been told, don't bring your laundry to school. You don't know what's going on at all. And, or maybe you do start to know, but they're managing a bunch of kids and they're not fully formed yet in their brains, but they're forming. And you're part of that formation. Yet at the same time, like the kids, what they're being taught and how they make the most out of it, and they have to be taught to make the most out of it.
Yeah.
That transfers to how they handle work situations, right? So it's kind of that, it's the beginning of everything. Like when you're in school, that's like the same thing as being in an office culture.
And if you look at the hierarchy of the education system, you can tell which schools are run properly because of it trickles down to how well the children are learning because the teachers are supported and the management is always making sure that, you know, like they're getting the extra courses and they're getting the professional development days that they need, and they're fighting for the teachers. And when it's the same thing. It just absolutely floors me that people think that children can live within all this trauma and still learn. So the fact that, you know, like we talked a little bit about it, and I'm not going to take that off ramp about safety in schools, but the kids have to trust that if they're at school, they're going to be okay. And so there needs to be some real thought put into, can children trust their environment? Can children trust their teacher? Can they trust that if they're in a situation and they're bullied, will someone listen to them? They need, you know, like there's so much trust that has to exist between not just the teachers and the administration, but the teachers and the children. Because I think of the teachers that I loved, and there was a deep trust. I also think of the teachers that, like Mrs. Bai, who's been dead so long, so I can say her name, but she was a bully. And no one trusted her, because if she was in a bad mood, you knew that she would do things, and she would then lie about it. Like, she slapped one kid, and the child went and reported it to the parent, and then she screamed at the child, "You're lying, I didn't do that, you take it back." And
wow,
it was wild.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's crazy. I think too, the kids have to feel they're actually getting, whether they're enjoying the the course they're taking or and the teacher, that they're getting something of value that they're gonna use to better themselves. I know that sounds a bit, maybe depending on the age of the child, but you know, if you're going to sit and listen to somebody for an hour to maybe 4 or 5 hours a day, it's got to bring some value to you. You have to either have fun while you're doing it, we have to have a sense of accomplishment.
Yeah.
Or it has to resonate with you in some way. Otherwise, you are going to start throwing things at the teacher.
Yeah.
You know,
and I've heard some of those stories, but you know, you have a teacher that has the trust of the kids, and that there's a deep caring, but there's just so much involved. I've talked to people who've taught in what's the term underfunded
schools.
And some of the things, like, they go in with a lot of high ideals. And they trust that, you know, the skills that they've learned, and they're going to be able to impart that. But they get into those situations, and the kids are so traumatized that they're not in a position to learn. And so all of those high ideals kind of go by the wayside. So trust is, I think, essential, not just for teachers, but for the children to feel like they are in an environment where they can trust that they're cared for, you know, someone's consistent and competent. Sometimes it's the only time that they have that consistency and the, you know, the communication. Exactly. And see all those positive examples.
Yeah, and I think also the principles are important too, because
well,
a teacher could go in, and I know teachers that are buying their own products, like their own books, pens, papers, you know, that kind of thing. And you see that happen. And then you go to the principal, who may be a not so nice one. And that's a really difficult situation too. And I think that's part of what's going on right now in our education system, is we have a lack of teachers. We have a lot of substitute teachers who don't have the full credentials, not saying that they're bad, but they've done a lot of learning online. And then all of a sudden now you're in a classroom. A lot of what you've both talked about is classroom dynamics. A lot of times, because of COVID, a lot of things are being done online, and you do somehow have to, your communication has to jump so much further when you're communicating online versus in person, especially for kids. And especially, you know, there's also the trust and communication between the teacher and the parent. And sometimes that could be one of the hardest things, because their kids, it's kind of like us doing pet sitting. You have to trust us in your home and with your pet who's your baby, right? And I'm not saying kids are pets, everybody. It's just, you know, we have to have some lightheartedness here, but you are. And it's like, okay, we're going to put our kids in this school. And sometimes people go for it and spend oodles of money on schools, private schools, and you have to do all the muckety-muck social crud, you know, to get your kid in this school. The kid doesn't care. I just want to play with paper airplanes. Who knows? But there's this communication and trust. So the teacher and the parents have to have that trust with each other. And the parents have to have the trust from the teacher, that the teacher trusts that, you know, when Johnny goes home with his schoolwork to get his homework done, that he's in a supportive background or environment at home, so he can do his homework. Because sometimes that environment is out the window too. It's like, you know, how many kids go home to an empty house? A lot.
You know, and I have taken a lot of online courses. And after 2 hours, my brain shuts off. Like I, you know, like you're staring at the screen for a couple of hours. And I might do that once a week. Like when I was taking my certification for my doula certification, it was once a week. It was a 2 hour class. And at the end of the 2 hours, I was, I was so tired. And that was one day a week. And now, we're, you know, during COVID, we were expecting kids to be on for 6-7 hours a day. Like,
that's a lot.
That's unrealistic.
Well, and especially like movement wise in a classroom, you know, you do kind of mess with each other a little bit here and there, and throw things here, skip things along the floor. And you have recess time that you go out and come back. You have lunch, we go out, you come back, and you have different personalities in each class. That is not the same as staring at the screen.
No, no, there's all of the interaction.
There's no interaction, which is half of the fun of going to school.
Yeah. And I was talking to some teachers and they, I was talking to a teacher and she said she had to call the parents because what was going on behind the student, like there was times when the parents wouldn't have clothes and they'd be walking in the background.
Yes. So,
you know, you have to trust your parents are going to get dressed or you're not going to be embarrassed in front of all your friends. So
parents are walking around. Hey, let's have another glass of wine. Teacher, do you want one? It's mimosa time. Yeah. But you know, there's, you know, and this goes back to the village, I think. And I think a lot of parents have their group of parent and kid friends, you know, like little mini communities within a school where the kids do things together. The parents got to know each other, whether they like each other really or not. They're like, it's barbecue time. It's good for the kids. Let's all do that. And, you know, that's when you take your Portofino wine thing and you hide it. No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't have kids, but I do know what it's like to learn and have that community, that village, because that's where I think trust really goes in there. If something goes down, when you have a community that's strong together, and it doesn't mean, like you talked about, being competent. It doesn't mean you have to really like that person, but they're competent, so they're part of the community, so they need to be welcomed. You just don't have to coddle them, and they don't want to be coddled, those kind of people, you know, but they do need to be there and be part of it, because when stuff goes down, you're all there together, and you can all rise up and help each other, versus if you're on the, on your own, you're screwed. So trust to me is that, like you talk about the five tenets of trust, it's a circle to me. And that's when it comes to kids, the teachers, the parents, the leadership of the school. And even when we go to a, you know, community looking at what happens with school funding, kids want to know that an actual community that they're in, that they're looking to buy a home when they get out, they're looking to maybe open a business and hire people or be hired. Who is going to be your next wave of employees in a company? Yes. So when we look at in putting money into schools, there's a trust in that. You know, you want to put a skateboard park in this in a town for the kids in the school, get them involved in projects. It's a community trust thing to me, because if you don't give kids an outlet, they will take their skateboards in your quaint little historic downtown. They will. And it will bug your guests going into your pretty little store. But if you, as a shopkeeper, didn't invest in the school and the taxes for that and the funding of kids, whether or not you have kids, you're going to have a problem. So I look at trust being the entire community, because if you don't have kids in your community, well, then you have a retirement home. Which is a whole other form of kids.
Well, it's true.
Because everybody wants to play and have a good time in the pool. I do.
I was think I was just reading that, you know, now I've got the ideal situation. I don't have to go to school. I don't have to work. I can play all day. I can have naps when I want to.
Chocolate cake.
Yeah. So, you know, like, honestly, I think we just have to get through childhood and teenage years so that we can have our toddler phase when we're like
adults.
Adults, yeah. Absolutely.
But can you imagine what it must be like to have like some of the classrooms in like areas like in California, classroom could have 40 kids in it. Can you imagine 40 different personalities, mm-hmm. and you're supposed to stand up there in front of them and turn your back if you're going to write on the chalkboard. Mm. And you're supposed to teach in a manner that all those kids can assimilate, understand, and behave.
Yeah, I can't. I mean,
and then, you know, the bell rings, out goes those 40, and here comes the other 40, right. A new set of 40. That's a lot of personality.
And that understand, yeah, because of personalities, and every kid takes in things, mm-hmm. differently. Is it, you know, through their ears? Yeah. Is it, you know, are they, you know, have the visual? Everybody, some are just completely cerebral. Everybody's a little different in how they, mm-hmm. take knowledge. But I do, I think trust is such a huge factor. I know, Lee, you do workshops and go into companies. Do you ever go into like school systems or even to a community meeting, like a town hall, mm-hmm. meeting? You know, it's like even the, you know, the head of schools for this country, like, I've got to stop because I was about to say something politically relevant.
You know, what usually if I'm speaking in front of educators, it's at a conference. So I'll be brought in to speak at like for, what is it? It's called Association of School Board Officials. Okay. And so I'll talk about trust and how to build it and how to grow it. And then get into, and here's what I find really interesting. There's a lot of times when I'll go in, so I've got the heads of a lot of the different schools or the associations, and I'll get them to do an assessment on what do they think is the areas of trust that need to be worked on. And I've had people say, oh, I don't want to do that. We've had problems recently, and it will just bring up, it will just bring it to the attention again, and it's just been calmed down. So I'm not maybe explaining it very well, what they're basically saying is, I don't want to know that there's any problems because then people will expect us to do something.
Well, I can see that in a lot of different industries.
Yeah. And I really can. If I go in, I want to say, let's look at it from a positive. If you're willing to look at the areas that need to be improved, then you can start working on them. But exactly. If you don't acknowledge the areas that need to be worked on, they're going to stay exactly the way they are, which is actually lucky and doesn't work.
Yeah, you actually don't have any control then.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't be in control and not have responsibility.
Yeah.
So I wonder, it's kind of a two-handed thing. If you want to take control, you better be responsible. Like, I remember reading some of the school papers that Lisa would bring home. And 98% of the time, I'm like, oh, that's good. That's well written. That makes sense. But there were a couple I'm like, no, whoa. And I'd have to go and say to the teacher, like, one, the mimeograph sheet, she said, that I forget what century, but Jewish people, the Jewish diaspora was the end of Jewish people across the world.
Oh, like, they disappeared off the face of the earth.
Yeah, they disappeared. That's exactly thousands, how
hundreds
cheated.
Of thousands of Jews disappeared off the face of the earth.
And I'm like, wow, I missed that in history class.
Now, that was just one of those
that was so weird.
Then you saw her at ladies' night.
Oh yeah, and now I'm like, this is just getting a little bit too weird.
But you have to address these
about things. Was she talking about the Holocaust? I mean, they did disappear off the face of the earth because they were.
Well, but you know what I mean. You don't. That's not how you teach.
The way it was said was basically, mm-hmm. you would come away the impression that there is no more Jewish people.
Like somebody waved a wand.
They're all
and that
gone.
Was that. That's they it.
All, like
without giving the historical context and everything.
Yeah, like they were in a boat and they all rowed off the edge, and that would make the
because the world is flat.
Because
the earth is flat. But
the earth is flat, and there went the Jewish.
There's
people.
Situations, and you'll go as a parent to the principal and the teacher and say, "Hey, let's revisit this because it's confusing to kids." Mm-hmm. And there's got to be like a trust again, going back to, "Hey, you guys are going to fix this." And maybe they'll just talk to it and they'll say, okay, we'll just scratch that page out for next year. But they haven't really addressed it or really fixed to, mm-hmm. make it really move forward. Like what you were talking about. And I think there's a trans, I mean, I know that's why they have the PTA, and it's more than cookies and bake sales. Mm-hmm. That is part of why you have the PTA.
Yeah.
But it is about transparency. And I think transparency and trust go hand in hand in a very interesting way, right?
Yeah, yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. You know, I just don't
want everything to be transparent. Like, you do not want me to be wearing a see-through dress to school.
That might be too much transparency, but
yes, you know, there's no trust in that. No,
I just remember teachers who would try and say, "Oh, well, you can't teach children that will upset them." And what I found with my kids is that if they asked a question, I would answer it, even if it was something that you'd go, "Oh, okay, I don't want to talk about this." But if they're asking, they already have an idea of what it is, you know. And I apologize to anyone who's offended by this, but this was our son when he came home, and he was 10 years old, and we're sitting at the supper table, and of course my husband was on a business trip because he missed some of these questions, and Phil said, "So, Mom, what's a blowjob?" It's like, oh, okay.
That's
so I explained what it is, and he just had this look like,
ew.
And then he said, his best friend Josh came from a very, very religious family, and he said, "Why can't you just be like Josh's mom and tell me it's none of my business?"
Oh,
funny.
See, but then you,
that's interesting. Yeah.
Okay.
But what I said to him is, okay, Phil, so here's why I don't do that, because I know you and your friends, and I know that you didn't know what it meant, and you were saying things like, "Oh, go get a," and you, if you said that in front of the teachers, and you don't know what it means, how would you feel afterwards? Because you had been saying that, and he went, "Okay, well, I guess it's good you told me then."
Mm-hmm.
So I always think that it doesn't matter if you're uncomfortable as a parent, and even to the point where I used to have friends who used to say, "I can't believe that you actually call the little Dewey on a boy a penis in front of your children."
What are you gonna do? No, see, I mean, don't start me, because like this is, that's where all the different terms. It's like people who teach kids goo goo gaga words.
Yeah, it was like, that doesn't, well, but that's the name of it.
One day you have to sit down and say, "Listen, what does goo goo gaga mean?" You have to now goo goo gaga your child,
right?
You know, and they don't know. But I think that's confusing. Transparency. Well, okay, so I didn't know what a blowjob was either.
But so I'll tell you later, Lisa.
No, but listen, Nancy had a barbecue.
Oh my God.
I said, "Oh, I've got a new joke. I stood up and told the new joke to Nancy's horror. And I didn't know why everybody thought it was funny. I thought one part was funny, but I had no idea what I said. And I wasn't allowed to do joke time unless I told Nancy after this. I stood up and I said, "What did the hurricane say to the coconut tree? Hold on to your nuts. This is going to be one hell of a blowjob."
It's funny.
But boy, did I get in trouble.
And she's like, "Do you know?"
I said, I just remember going, "I'm sorry, I said nuts, Mom." You go,
"Yeah," and she thought the word nuts.
Isn't funny. I just thought I got to say nuts.
Yeah, because
to a whole bunch of people,
you weren't allowed.
Completely happy.
Lisa was in different schools in different countries, and in the one you couldn't call another kid a nut.
Oh yeah, that's like
remember? And so she's thinking it's really funny.
You can't say it's absolutely mental. You've gone mental. You're not allowed to do that.
Yeah. But you know, but the whole thing, the reason I gave the kind of the story about Phil is that then I went on to say, this is why you
need to know.
You don't want to say anything about it. Like, now you understand what it is. Mm-hmm. Now you know that it's not appropriate to say that in front of people, and here's why. Or, you know, honestly, if they're talking, if the three little boys were talking, you don't have any control, or three little girls, or, you know, when they're that age, if they can get a rise out of you, think they might do it, but at least they understand what they're saying. And I've always felt that you give children credit for being intelligent. And then if you talk to them and let them know, here's why we don't talk about that, here's what it means, and here's why people might be upset about it, trust them to use their best judgment.
Well, and it's embarrassing if you're at a certain age where everybody else knows, but you don't know.
Yeah.
Then it's really embarrassing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And I know people are not going to agree with me, and that's okay. And I completely respect the fact that if you don't want children to know those terms,
don't invite me to your barbecue.
Yeah. Don't invite Lisa
to your barbecue.
but I love this because it's educational, and they won't grasp it as much as when you're adult, right? But they're already in that mode now of responsibility. You've now learned this word.
Yeah.
I remember when I first learned the F word, I thought it was cool until like I realized all the different connotations, a negative, and I remember going, yeah, when mom's not around, I'm going to say it a whole bunch. And then it was like, oh, okay, now it's kind of boring, you know. And then you know that once you know and your parents know you know, you can't get away with using it because you've been told.
Yes.
Ignorance is bliss at times when you're a kid. So you just took his little bliss away. Because then he has
part of growing up
in front of your teacher and he knows. Then the teacher says, oh, you know, Phil said this. And you can say, I've taught him that word. He will be reprimanded for that. You know what I mean? Because he's been told. Now, if it's the first time, then you say, okay, now you have to do the first time. It's an interesting thing, but it is part of that. You want that trust. It's like if you wear a weird dress, your husband doesn't tell you that's a weird looking dress. Okay. We're back to that again.
Alrighty.
It's honesty. It's about being honest, and you hope your teachers and those in the community have that. But always a fun discussion.
Yeah. Hopefully, and it'll be interesting. I'd love to hear from people who are listening. What are some of the things that are absolutely, no, I would never give my children that explanation. I don't trust that they have that. And part of it is their age and stage. I don't trust that they have the maturity to understand what I need to tell them. So if Philip would have been like 5 years old, I might have given him a different explanation. Yeah. But I'm really interested in finding out what are the trust things.
What are the no-nos?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at education and with the teachers. And what do you expect of the education for your family in order to trust?
What used to be, like when I was growing up, and what is now for kids with social media, with television, radio, plus computers, online classes, it's a totally different world. Mm. And what you see on television, what is X-rated, R-rated, and all that, you know that your kids see some of the things they're not intended to see. They know how to work remotes. They know how to get past things. I mean, some of the funniest things is like on websites, if you go into a website that has alcohol, it says, are you 18? Are you old enough to drink? Are you 21?
When you're 16, you
yes
know how to
no.
go. Yes,
yeah, I, yes I, or
absolutely.
No. So that's really going to keep a kid out, you know? So it's really kind of lame. You know, so if you don't teach a child when you think it's appropriate to teach them, start a little earlier possibly than you think, so that you have done your best to help your child.
Yeah.
And consistency.
And yourself through these things that are going to crop up, not if, when they crop
it is,
up, because they will.
It is really exactly that. It is about consistency, confidence, all of that. Mm-hmm. Caring is about putting boundaries and teaching those boundaries. So everyone, again, keep up with Lee. She's here every third Thursday for our Trust Talk. Go to thetrustarchitect.biz. Keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Thanks so much, Lee. Have a good time and watch your language.
Yes, just kidding. Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, Nancy. Take care.